The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55 KRC, The Talk Station, and Clear Channel Worldwide.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55 KRZ, The Talk Station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. I'm your host, John Johnston. As always, check out ballisticradio.com and facebook.com/ballisticradio. Also, please remember to check out my friend Todd Green's charity Rampage for the cure.org. Donating money to cancer research, really, really good thing. Anyway, co-hosting with me this evening is Mr. Andy Ulrich and Jimmy Beatty. How's it going, Jim?
It's going fine, John.
Oh, come on.
You've had too much monster drink.
No. You haven't been here in so long, man. I had to give you the...
You know, get me fired up, man. It works.
I don't think that's possible. Anyway... Other than making fools of herself, we're also going to be talking with trainer, writer, and TV personality Rob Pincus, who is a controversial figure, at least in some circles, inside and out of the firearms community. Rob is the founder of ICE Firearms Training Services. In addition to being the founder of ICE, Rob also hosts SWAT Magazine TV and is the developer of the Personal Firearms Defense video series. Really, really good series of videos that all sorts of people kind of get invited to do. A lot of really good information there. We're going to be talking with Rob probably in the second segment. So before that, Andy and I had something interesting happen this week that brought up an interesting topic as far as who's listening to what you say and how much would it affect you at a later date. And without getting into too much detail, you know, Andy and I are on Facebook and friends with each other, and somebody posted something more offensive than usual on his page that I commented on and proceeded to have a big long argument with me about why it doesn't matter.
And you actually caught it and kind of, I was in another room not paying attention to my Facebook, and you clued me into it. And when I looked at it, I was a little bit shocked.
Yeah. That's, and his argument for that though was that it was a private page, mm-hmm. and you know, obviously it doesn't matter that much because we're all friends here. The thing about that, a lot of people don't think about how their actions now can influence things later on for them. Specifically, you know, recently in the Zimmerman case, we had people digging back 10, 15 years into his history to see whether or not he was biased towards a certain group. You know, there's been other cases where what seems at first glance to be a good shooting, you know, becomes questionable, and then all these things from your past come up. So, I don't know. Yeah, it was just strange.
Yeah. And they're going to dig up something that's innocuous. If you put something that is fairly blatant mm-hmm. on a page, that's going to set the tone from now on. You're forever known. You can never change that. You will never be known for that picture that you posted on that page. Now, it's not going to hurt me because, you know, it wasn't, I didn't post it. But the guy who did, he's obviously, he puts his name on his Facebook page. He puts the place where he works on his Facebook page. And all it takes is someone to get mad at you, and suddenly your life can be ruined. I mean,
how about a simple job interview? What company out here doesn't do a scan of social networking before you hire a potential new employee?
Right.
Well, and my point was, you know, because I fully support everyone's First Amendment right to be an idiot mm-hmm. And a jerk. I take advantage of it all the time.
Would we have a show if we...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, would we? But seriously, though, there's a big difference between free speech and then, you know, if you're... Not even if you're trying to represent the rest of us, mm-hmm. but if you're a gun person, you know, guy, gal, whatever, and you're saying stupid things that will mm-hmm. further stereotypes that I don't believe to be true... Well, don't do that, because all it takes is one, you know, innocuous little comment. And it was funny, though, because he spent a couple hours arguing about how it doesn't matter because it was a private Facebook page. Right. And then he found out what I do mm-hmm. for a living. And But he asked you for a free plug for something or other that he was doing?
Yeah, and I didn't think that would go over very well, and I pretty much said, you know, you can go ahead and ask, but, you know, it's probably not going to happen now. So. Yeah,
and it just immediately proved my point, which doesn't happen too often that I immediately get proven right.
It's whatever. I mean, he took it down. I asked him to take it, the picture off, and he took the picture off there. So.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking with Rob Pincus in another minute or so. Probably my producer, Eric, is getting ready to get him on the line as we speak, so... Yep, he just waved at me. Eric's awesome, too. He kind of fixed the phone for me last weekend. But going back to it, and why does it matter if we're a good representative for the cause or the movement? You know, there are so many people that have no idea what anything at all about firearms. The only thing they hear about firearms is what MSNBC or one of those places tells them. And how often are they correct?
AR-15 shotgun.
Yeah, AR-15 shotgun, exactly, which should be cool, I guess, maybe. So,
but weighing into this, I mean, you gave me a few more of the details, you know, just the racial nature of the comment coming out at a time when the whole national and local conversation is about stand your ground and inappropriately throwing race into the mix. You're just throwing a bone to everyone who wants to, you know, fight that for illogical and improper reasons.
Well, it had caught me off guard so much because if anybody had ever followed my Facebook page, I want absolutely every law-abiding citizen who can carry a gun to carry a gun. I don't care what race you are, if you're African-American, if you're Hispanic, if you're Asian, if you're white, I want you to carry a gun.
Or even peach like me.
I want you to carry a gun because I want the criminals to be absolutely afraid to prey on, not to pick on any specific race and think that they're a target.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I have a 4.5-year-old, and it's funny what comes out of kids' mouths sometimes, and I thought it was just great. Because he doesn't, we were doing colors, and like, what color is this, what color is that, and all that. And, you know, what color is daddy?
Mm-hmm.
People. I'm people colored. You know, what color is someone else that is significantly darker than me? People colored. That's awesome. And that's really how it needs to be, because we all bleed the same color, you know. So and that's all that matters. And I just wanted to say something about that, because it struck me as interesting. Just how people don't think about where their comments are going to end up or how it could affect them later on. I don't know. It was just it bothered me, and I wanted to talk about it. So, hey, I did. Coming up next, we're going to be talking with Rob, producer, who's still trying to get him on the line. For some reason, whenever I get around the phones, they don't want to work properly for me. Rob, I met Rob last year at a conference. He was very, very polite. I've not taken training from Rob. Now, there are a couple things that he teaches that I personally don't agree with, but I think what's interesting is this man has probably put more thought into what he does than most folks tend to. And honestly, I think that's great. There are all sorts of instructors that I get to go to that don't, you know, don't explain why they do what they do. And at least I really have to give him credit for that, because it's impressive to see. And just I think it's going to be a really interesting show as far as getting to hear some of the reasons why he teaches what he teaches and some of the reasons why he teaches in the first place. But when we come back, we'll be talking with Rob Pincus about his training philosophy. Right now, though, you are listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Wealthy and wise, the Steve Perrin Coordinated Financial Planning Studios. This is 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station. Brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. So, holding on the line for us is Mr. Rob Pincus, and that music coming in was Avenged Sevenfold, which I really wish I was at that concert tonight, but I couldn't miss Rob. I mean, it's just going to be a great show. Also, to the troops and or soldiers or contractors who are listening in Afghanistan right now, thank you for your work, and thank you for listening. That's kind of cool. So, anyway, without further ado, Mr. Rob Pincus. Rob, are you there?
I am here. It's good to be on with you guys.
Hey, thanks so much for taking time out of your Sunday, I guess afternoon, where you're at right now.
Afternoon, yeah. I'm out here in California getting ready to fly back on the red eye tonight.
Nice, nice. So Well, once again, thanks for coming on. Also, too, thanks for the communication before the show as far as working out what we were going to talk about. If you don't mind, Rob, just for the people that are not familiar, can you briefly hit your background?
Yeah, I have been teaching full-time since about 2002, 2003. Left law enforcement in 2001 to do this as my full-time career. Took a year or two to get it paying all the bills and not having other things going on. Prior to that, again, I was in law enforcement. And then going back, I've worked in executive protection, various security roles, and also went to a military college and got a commission in the Army Reserve at the end of that four-year process.
Nice. Very nice. So you've been around the block a little bit, and you've also spent a lot of time with some of the other trainers of the day as far as just doing the work beforehand, which I think is really cool. So I'm curious, first of all, you've had a lot of success with what you teach, both commercially and as far as results go, haven't you?
Yeah, you know, the program, the various programs that we teach have generally been very well received. And one of them, our flagship program, so to speak, Combat Focus Shooting Program, has just celebrated its 10th anniversary, which it was formalized in September of 2003. And we just had our 6th annual instructor conference for people from all around the country who teach that program and celebrated the 10 years of continuing development and evolution.
Hey, that's great, man. That's really, really great. So I'm curious, and this is, there's a couple things that you teach that are slightly different than what other folks teach, and I'd really like to hear the why behind that, because a lot of times, and especially on the internet, you hear people complain about something that an instructor is doing, and they're doing it, you know, anonymously, first off, and there's no context or explanation behind that, and that's kind of what I'd like to get into a little bit, if you're all right with it.
Yeah, I think, why I teach any specific thing differently is certainly going to be spoken about in terms of that technique. In general, I think it's really important to understand that an instructor who's just doing what some other guy does might be a great instructor to go to. But as I heard you guys talking about before I got to join the call, it really does come down to them being able to explain why they teach it, even if it is the same as some other guy. I don't believe that in and of itself justifies the technique.
No, and I totally agree with you, too, because it's always I get to talk with a lot of folks now, especially, you know, even off the air, and it's curious to have conversations with other instructors about, oh, why do you do this, why do you do that? Well, because so-and-so does it. Well, that's not a good answer.
Right.
So I'm curious about, though, one thing, and I had a couple of online people email me questions before the show. One of the things that came up a lot, and this is a bit of minutia, and some of the new to firearms people might not appreciate it as much, but I don't care, so I'm going to ask you anyway. As far as reloads go, something interesting that you do, and you're probably one of the few instructors that teaches it this way, instead of having bullets forward on the belt for your reload, you have them facing backwards. I was curious as your reasoning behind that.
Yeah, a couple of things. One, I think you're right. New shooters aren't going to maybe get as much out of this because, you know, you go to the range today and you'll probably see, somewhere between a 60 and 40 split, whether people have their you know, bullets that their bullets are pointed to the center line or bullets pointed away from the center line when they stage their spare magazines on the belt. And historically, the reason that it became in vogue to have your bullets pointed forward was, well, that's how all the fast guys did it. Of course, the fast guys were being measured in a staged competition environment or a training environment that just replicated that competition environment. And in fact, if you looked at the fastest guys were even, you know, canting their magazines at specific angles around their belt to match where their hand would lay as it was coming off of the gun at extension, and also with the magazine staged off the body. So if you look at, you know, the fastest reloads are being done by the fastest competition shooters, and if you look at the way they're wearing their gear, their magazines are actually staged off their body a little bit to give that hand plenty of room.
Right.
On the other hand, somebody who's carrying for the purposes of defense is generally carrying the magazine pressed right up against their body, sometimes even inside the waistband, and generally not at the front of the hip, but behind the point of the hip, over on the side of the body, or even slightly to the rear. Well, if you figure out the way the hand naturally lays in that area, And if you think about the position that your hand is in when you, for example, reach into your pocket, think about the position that your hand is in when you grip your gun on the strong side. The thumb is next to the body. The thumb isn't turned forward or turned backwards. And what is much easier to do for most people, especially in that concealed carry environment, is keep the elbow close to their body, not turn it out away from their body, putting their thumb backwards and their index finger to the front. So it's hard. We got a theater of mind thing going on right now, obviously, on the radio. But people who are interested can certainly take a look at the way I index my magazines and any of the reloading videos online or at personaldefensenetwork.com. And what we see is it's just flatly more ergonomic, more comfortable, and more natural or more intuitive to have the magazines in a position where the bullets point back. Now, that being said, this is something that I've really evolved and changed my mind about. You know, our motto for the 10th anniversary of combat focus shooting was still evolving. And here's an example of something that I feel like I've really evolved on. You know, originally I was doing it like everybody else, bullets to the center line. Eventually I realized, wow, it's a lot smoother and faster from concealed carry positions to have my bullets pointed backwards. The next evolution was seeing so many new shooters who found it much easier to not have to overthink the twisting of the hand and the indexing of the bullets with the fingertip of the index finger. It came down to teaching people more efficiently. It was easier and more intuitive for them to reload, especially with the gun up against the body with the bullets pointed backwards. So people that weren't burdened with the tradition or burdened with what other guys were doing found it easier to reload with the bullets pointed backwards. So for a long time, we advised people to change to that method. And what I realized, again, after watching students, and this is where so much of what we teach is informed by just watching students on the range, students at every level, it's very hard to change that habit of twisting the hand and pulling the elbow away from the body for people who've been doing it for 3, 4, 5 years, thousands of reps, however long it's been. So I've evolved to a position of kind of agnostic. You know, if we have a brand new shooter, absolutely, we're going to tell them to start with their bullets pointed backwards, and they're probably going to find a lot of success with that. But if somebody comes to me and they've had their bullets pointed forward for 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it's been, I'm not going to suggest they change, because at the end of the day, the 1%, 2%, 3% difference in convenience and in close quarters, being able to access without having to turn your elbow away from your body, that kind of thing, it's really not worth the tragic mistake of having 10,000 reps of the bullets forward override the 50 reps you've gotten to practice of bullets backwards in the middle of a gunfight. So if you've already established the muscle memory, the patterned movement of bullets forward, we tell people just, you know, stick with what's working for you on that one.
Okay. And it's, and like I said, explanation. And that's great to hear that. And I hadn't thought of it in that way. Something that you brought up that I think is an interesting point to touch on is that you're at the point now where if someone's already got established habits, when they come to your class, you're not making them change things that they don't want to or are not willing to change?
No, I would disagree with that version of that interpretation. I wouldn't want you to take that away. What was specific there is the idea of if it's a small difference, so 1%, 2%, 3%, especially with something like a slide lock reload, which isn't an imperative commonly used defensive shooting skill. It's something that is, in fact, very rarely used in law enforcement or certainly personal or home defense situations. So in that case, we're not going to try to force somebody to overcome that habit for such a small gain. On the other hand, let's say that they're used to shooting in a Weaver position with their body bladed. Well, there's so many advantages to being in a more squared off position with both arms fully extended that we would absolutely have them change that. One of the other things that's very interesting is the idea that it's not about what they want. You know, we assume coming in the door that what they want is to get the best advice we can give them for protecting themselves with a firearm if they need to. So we don't really care, quite honestly, what they want to do in terms of shooting. We feel like they're there for an education. We'll discuss it. We'll explain it. But at the end of the day, we certainly don't do it's another tool for your toolbox type training and let the student decide. We tell them what we think is best. And if they disagree, that's of course fine as well. But we're not going to placate their ego by telling them it's okay, do whatever you want.
Right. And once again, brings an interesting question. We've got about a minute and a half. We're talking with Rob Pincus right now. So what would you say the mix of students that you have is? I mean, do you mainly have new shooters? Do you have a lot of, experienced shooters, military guys? What's your mix these days?
It's been changing. You know, whereas, you know, 8 years ago, it was overwhelmingly in our defensive classes, experienced people who were either military law enforcement, private security, or civilians who had been through several classes. Nowadays, we're just as likely to have, you know, 20 or 30% of the class literally have never taken a formal shooting, defensive shooting class outside of maybe to get their concealed carry permit. And now we've also developed programs very specifically for that market. So we have an introduction to home defense handguns and an introduction to concealed carry handguns program, which are aimed specifically at new shooters. You know, I talk a lot about what I think is the lost generation of gun handlers in the U.S. You know, if you were raised in the 80s and certainly in the 90s, you probably didn't grow up with guns. And if you didn't grow up with guns, and in your 20s or in your 30s or even in your 40s, you decide that you want to have a firearm for personal defense, and you seek out training, we want to make sure that you're getting the training you need and that you don't feel like, well, gee, that's a combat focus force. That must be advanced. I'm not ready for that. And we try to make sure that there's something for everybody in that way.
Excellent. Hey, we got to go to commercial real quick, but when we get back, we're going to be asking Rob a few more questions about why he does what he does and also some other things that he's known for. Right now, though, you are listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Brian Thomas, Monday in the Morning Show.
We'll talk about it Monday, along with the Monday Morning Spleen Bend from my dad. Make sure you're around. 55KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Right now, we're talking with national trainer, author, and writer Rob Pincus. If you have any questions, you can call us at 513-749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255 if you're out of the area. We'll try and take your calls at the end of the evening if we're able. Just kind of depends on how the show goes. So let's get Rob back on the line. Rob, are you still there?
I am still here.
Excellent. Thanks. We should thank the phone gods for not causing too many problems tonight. So it seems to be a reoccurring theme. So we were talking about magazine orientation, which I realize is a very esoteric concept for most of the new people getting into the firearms. And I'm sorry, we'll get back on topic in a minute. I think too, and I was curious to ask you this, Rob, do you think that there's a lot of argument about, it kind of reminds me of my kung fu is better than your kung fu or something like that, when people lose sight of the fact that we're all trying to promote safe gun handling skills and trying to encourage people to get into the sport?
I think that happens. What I find is that happens at the hobbyist level much more than it does at the professional level. So, and when I say hobbyist, I mean someone who goes to, you know, somebody who goes to five classes a year, and I used to be that guy. You know, somebody who goes to multiple handgun classes, tries to train with every trainer, you know, reads all the magazine articles, watches all the videos. The guys who really used to be the core of the business, and still to a certain extent are the core of the demographic, but those used to be kind of the only guys going to classes, right? There were a lot of the national level instructors and the national level schools that would see the same people cycle through. And those guys, just like a gun collector might really, you know, get into minutia of one model versus another, the guys who are training junkies and training collectors, they really want to get into the minutia of one technique versus another. The fact is, when the instructors and we all get together at that SHOT Show or the NRA Show or different training conferences, you know, we recognize very quickly that, you know, 98% of this stuff is overlap. 100% of it is the best intention stuff that any of us can do. Nobody's out there, you know, trying to give out bad information. And it's really at that last 2%, that's where the discussions happen. You know, sometimes the discussions are sometimes passionate, but almost always very respectful. And as you said, everybody's coming from a place of wanting to help the student get better. And as we see more and more novices coming to classes, they're less interested in the minutiae and less interested in the A versus B. They don't even know there's A or B. They just want some information.
Well, and that's it. And it's interesting, too, because I get asked a lot of times, you know, hey, should I go to this trainer? Should I not go to that trainer? And unless they're teaching really terrible things, training's never a bad thing. Now, I wanted to give you the opportunity to address, and there are some online controversies that are connected with you that I've, you know, run into at least when I was researching the show and all that, and I kind of wanted to ask you about it if you're all right with that.
Yeah, there's plenty of them. Some legit and some apocryphal. So well, let's see which ones you came up with.
Yeah. Well, there's a story floating around about you frisbeeing a student's firearm across a firing line, and I was curious to get the scoop on that.
That's a great place to start. You know, the fact is every trainer has probably got his story that's probably based somewhat in fact, but possibly retold and retold, blown way out of proportion.
Okay.
You know, and that's probably the number one with me that comes up every once in a while. You know, it's an old story. The fact is that there certainly have been times when people have had some very gross safety violations since this time, which is going back, you know, the middle of the last decade when that story popped up. But there have been certainly times where someone is grossly violating safety rules, you know, points a gun at another student, finger on the trigger, flags everybody just because of absent-mindedness, where disarming them, not violently by any stretch, and, you know, either disassembling, clearing and disassembling the Glock in a relatively quick time frame right in front of their face and dropping it on the ground certainly gets their attention, and I think that's completely warranted. In the case that was brought up, what had happened, it's kind of a threefold story. Back around, I don't know, 2006, 2007, I annoyed a lot of people by writing an article called Bad Habits, and I just kind of called out a lot of things that were staples in the training industry but really didn't make any sense. They were either leftovers from competition environment or things that were misplaced from the tactical, you know, military special operations environment and stuck in the personal defense world, and just kind of said, you know, here's a bunch of things to think about. Maybe these aren't the best things to be training on the range. Well, that annoyed some people, you know, some of these codename guys on the internet, and a real firestorm started on one of the forums. And in the middle of that firestorm, I didn't handle it well, because my response at the time was I had a pretty elite group, about as elite as it gets, a group of military students that week. Mm-hmm. And my response was kind of like, you know what, tough guy 37, you have no idea what you're talking about. I happen to be training some of the most elite warriors in our country this week, and they seem to think I know what I'm talking about, so maybe you need to chill out.
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't the best response. You know, I kind of egged it on, and out of the woodwork came a guy with an agenda and a little chip on his shoulder, you know, would-be peer, I guess, a would-be competitor, and he told a story that he had heard secondhand, thirdhand, and he has since admitted that he even blew it out of proportion a little bit the way he originally presented it, that I had taken a student's gun because the student had holstered when he wasn't supposed to and threw it downrange into the berm. And that was, like, really far from the truth and completely not what had happened. And in fact, this was like a year after this incident, and the student had been a repeat student. I had taken his gun from his holster, which was at slide lock, and I carried it around for about a minute and a half, and I was giving commands to students all individually to shoot at an extremely distant target. They were having kind of like a little competition to see who could hit it first.
Yeah.
And at some point, I got tired of carrying it around, and I just put it down at the end of the line on the range. And not a throw, not a chuck, certainly not downrange, certainly not the way it's been presented, that I, you know, stripped it out of his hand and threw a live gun downrange in the middle of a firing drill. And a few minutes later, we took a reload break, and he came up to me and said, "Where's your gun?" And I said, "It's over there, down on the firing line." And apparently one of the students thought that I had tossed it over there, never said a word about it, but told the story to a buddy of theirs. And then the story grew and the story grew and the story grew. And it still comes up a few times a year, and I'm sure, you know, now everybody's going to hit the Google search and see three or four or five different versions of it. But as many stories as probably are much, much more interesting to talk about, that's the one that keeps coming up.
Yeah, it was that's the first one I got asked. "Hey, are you going to ask Rob about this?" I was like, "Okay, I guess." So,
Rob, we thought you'd tell us you got a good 200-yard throw out of it. You know, I mean, we at least expected, you know, some extra enhancement there.
I wish there had been, like, if the story were as good as – I've heard some really good versions of that story, and that's not one of them. You know, but like I said, there's stories that is that, you know, the instructor that shot at a pigeon from the lunch break picnic table and while everybody didn't have their hearing protection on. There's who knows how many instructors that have been, you know, kicked off ranges or asked to leave. And, you know, and you hear these crazy stories. And somewhere way deep down in there, there's probably some piece of fact. You know, the world-renowned instructor who fired a round off from his own prototype rifle at a press event at SHOT Show, you know,
yeah.
in a meeting room. I mean, there's stories out there. And you know, at the end of the day, I think if what people were so upset about were really something to be really upset about, you wouldn't see these guys on the national stage. You wouldn't see these guys being respected by their industry peers and, you know, at conferences and writing books and on TV shows and all that stuff, or on the radio with you guys.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was just interesting, though, because I had heard the story repeated, and it was different than, you know, the truth of the event. I just really wanted to hear your side of it, because you so often you read these things, and you never get to hear anyone explain the situation or defend it, and I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, so, I always tell people, you know, just anything you read, like the best thing you read about an instructor and the worst thing, you probably want to throw those out and kind of go for the middle ground if you're really looking for the truth.
Yeah, so, somewhere in the middle. I was going to ask you about the YouTube video where you did the one-handed slide lock kick to get it back into battery, but we're running low on time, so I'll
people
let you.
Love that.
Oh, well, hey, maybe in the next segment. What I wanted to ask, we got about a minute and a half. You became extremely famous last couple months, last year, for suggesting that you store a quick access safe in your child's room, if you have a child. In about a minute and 10 seconds, can you talk about that real quick?
Yeah, exactly what you just said is exactly what happened. And fortunately, the more left-leaning anti-gun side of the media reported it as, you know, NRA speakers suggest keeping guns in kids' rooms and kind of left the quick access safe out. At the end of the day, it's real simple. If you hear a bump in the night and if you're a parent, you're probably going to be inclined to go check on your kids and make sure they're safe. And you know what? If you find out they're safe and you're already in that room, why not lock the door, get your defensive firearm out of that quick access safe, get on the phone with the police and stay barricaded and not have to take your kids to the gun or think that you might hesitate to go check on your kids to get a gun from somewhere else. Let's put everything we care about in one place, lock that door, and know that we're as safe as we can be while we get the police on the way. That was the fundamental idea. And it's not only, you know, it's an option for people when we talk about staging guns for home defense.
Yeah, and it was just, I read that, and I'm like, I took a minute because I heard the original headline suggest storing guns in kids' room. But when I actually read what you had said, it was just genius. And
it's brilliant.
It really is. I'm sorry, Rob, we have to go to commercial real quick. When we get back, we're going to be answering your questions. I might let him talk about the YouTube thing. We've got a caller on the line. If you want to call in, 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Glenn Beck.
This will blow your mind.
Tomorrow at 9:06 on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station. Brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. If you have any questions for Rob, you can call us at 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. I have a couple callers on the line right now, but we'll try and get you in if we can. So, Rob, are you still there?
I am here.
Excellent. So, great. Do you mind taking a couple callers?
Let's do it.
Hey, perfect. So, first up, we have Aaron, who's got a question for you about optics. So, let's see here. Aaron, are you there?
I am.
Hey, Aaron. How's it going tonight?
Great. John, I love your radio show.
Hey, thanks, man. I really, really appreciate it.
Yes. Rob, I saw a video last year where you were shooting the Bro Combat Optic VCO. I purchased one myself last year, and I just wanted to get your opinion on it, and how do you like it compared to the ACOG?
I love it. I think it really is the evolution of the ACOG, you know, and it's certainly not the kind of optic that I need on a home defense gun. It's not the kind of optic that 90% of my students need. When you start looking at some rural patrol officers, and certainly in a military setting that it was designed for, it really is outstanding. I mean, it gives you the magnification. It gives you a couple different options on the reticle. And the fact that it adjusts the brightness of the reticle based on the light on the target, which really is that current generation. At the time that this was designed, it was the next generation. It was the evolution of that concept. You know, we've seen all kinds of guys make different adjustments to the way the brightness of the ACOG chevron was going to come up. And this one is something that does it by itself. And there's a lot of other little advanced tweaks you can put in there, too, as far as the programmability of it and some specialized military applications. But it's incredibly rugged. I tend to abuse gear when I get it for test and evaluation. The Bro was no different. It continues to be abused on one of my loaner guns for classes. And it just stands up. It does what it's supposed to do. It has the battery life. It has the durability. And again, the one unique, hugely valuable feature for that military guy who's going in and out of buildings, a lot of different lighting conditions, sometimes shooting in through windows into darkness, sometimes shooting out through windows into the light. that adjustable reticle brightness based on what the optic is reading from the target is really invaluable.
I agree. Yeah, that was one of my biggest selling points was the photo cell that was integral in it, and also the fact that it's made out of titanium. Those were the two big selling points for me.
Yep. So yeah, hopefully
you made a great choice.
Yeah,
thank you.
I still need to play with one of those. I got to play with the ACOGs a little bit, and you know, it's funny, I don't shoot very far out anymore, so I've got my little aim point micro on there. Hey, Aaron, thanks for calling in tonight, and thanks for listening to the show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. So right now we have an open line. We had one caller call in, and I've got a question for Rob. But if you want to get back on the line to ask your question, 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. Now, Rob, we had a caller, didn't want to be on air, but they had an interesting question. I was curious. I'm going to modify it slightly. They were asking about whether or not if you had someone come through your training class that you got a funny feeling about, would you refuse them training or report them to anyone? And have you ever had anything like that happen?
Yeah, I've never had a situation where I felt like I had to report someone, you know, to anything except maybe a supervisor. You know, there's been times where we've had one person I can think of in particular, we did have to ask to leave a class. In fact, it was in the early morning as the class was getting started before we even really got into the work of the class that we realized something was a little bit off with this guy. We contacted his it was a armed professional course only. We contacted the security company that he had supposedly worked for. And it turned out that he had his credentials were fraudulent, or at the very least, someone inside of that company had extended him credentials that he hadn't really earned or deserved, and he shouldn't have been in that class. He distinguished himself because of his behavior, but we certainly contacted that company, and we sort of left it in their hands what they wanted to do in terms of any follow-up or action with the supervisor that was involved or this gentleman as far as the legalities of it. I always say that, you know, the old standard used to be this a certificate of good conduct or a statement of good conduct that someone would get from, you know, the list was kind of broad. It was like, you know, law enforcement official, a judge, or some religious clergy, you know, a priest or something. And I always thought, you know, that's a little half-measured in order from, I'm not going to hang my conscience on this guy's preacher saying he's a good guy and he can come to training. So I prefer to be much more subjective about who can take my classes. Obviously, you need to be legally capable of owning and having access to a firearm to be able to take the training in the first place. And after that, it really comes down to a subjective my read on a student. Now, I'd say there's been less than 10 students. Certainly, I could think of six off the top of my head where I've said, you know, this class isn't for you anymore, whether it was at the lunch break or at the end of day one or very early in the class. There have been many more people that I've talked to on the phone or via email that I've probably pretty actively dissuaded from signing up for the course just because of the attitude or the questions that we're asking just really didn't sit well with me. It's not something I can really quantify objectively and say, you know, if you say X, Y, or Z, or if you have X, Y, or Z background, I'm not going to let you in outside of the legal prohibitions from access to firearms. I prefer to run it subjectively.
Well, hey, makes sense to me. And it's kind of one of those things that's hard to explain. Once you get to be around students for a little while, I guess you get a better feel for it. I've got all sorts of people texting me this question, and I'm friends with specifically one big 1911 guy, and you're kind of... You made a challenge a while ago, and I think it was towards the little micro 3-inch 1911s, but I'm not sure if you expanded it or not. Have you had many 1911s through your class that have made it all the way through the class, and have you had to refund anybody their tuition and pay for their ammo?
Certainly haven't had to refund anybody. You know, I've had 1911s make it through. I honestly can't remember that I've ever had anyone meet the criteria of the challenge. And the criteria of the challenge really, you know, people online are, oh, that's not fair. Well, no kidding. That's the point of the challenge, is that if you really think that, A, your gun is that good, and you really think that you are that good, then show up to class, prove it, and you basically end up with a little over $1,000 you know, in your pocket at the end of the day, because I'll refund your tuition and pay for your ammo. So the challenge is no mechanical malfunction of the firearm with no maintenance or cleaning throughout the two-day class and no operator errors of the safety. In other words, every time the gun goes out, the safety's off and you get to shoot. Every time the gun comes in and you're assessing, the safety's on before you reholster, and that you never try to, for example, tap rack with the safety on or have any other situations where running that safety interferes with the gun doing it, doing what it's supposed to do. And I've had guns make it through the class, and I've had students that I haven't noticed errors with the safety on, but the fact is I can't remember a single time when I've had both all the way through a full two-day class, and it's just the nature of that machine and the extra complications that you add to the situation when you use it, and that's why in 2013 I considered a hobbyist gun. I don't consider it a gun that someone who's serious about efficient personal defense chooses.
Yeah, it's like a gun hipster gun, sort of. So
it kind of is. You know, some people are obviously, it kind of goes back to that bullets forward or backwards. The people that have a gun that they trust and they trained with it and they know how to run it, there are plenty of people who are not just hobbyists who carry and rely on the 1911. So, you know, keep that hate email. I don't need that one. I get it. But today, if you're just getting started today as a, you know, a 24, 25, 26-year-old guy who's getting ready to take this seriously as a, for the rest of your life, being ready to defend yourself or others, and 1911 is not the place to start.
No, yeah. And getting one that I'd trust my life to for under a couple grand is hard to do too. So we got another 2 minutes or so, Rob, and no callers on the line. Do you feel like taking the kick in the slide question? Do you feel like addressing?
It's such a red herring, but the real deal is, that was an excerpt from an hour-long DVD on emergency manipulation of a handgun, and it's like one of maybe five or six options we give people of how one-handed they can get that slide back in the battery under some different adverse circumstances. Generally, it's taught specifically in relation to weak-handed for a right-handed person when you have mobility and you have a poorly selected rear sight that doesn't allow you to rack reliably. Maybe you don't have a lot of gear on. You've dealt with a malfunction. You're already shooting weak-handed. So this is a pretty extreme situation. And one of the options we expose people to is the option of, you know, any kind of force against that slide to knock it off of the slide stop or the slide lock is going to achieve the goal. And for some people, if you're upright and you're acrobatic enough, balanced enough, kicking back to the slide as you extend the gun down, again, this is kind of theater of the mind stuff, we'll do it very reliably. And you know, very rarely do we see students choose that as their primary method. We certainly wouldn't suggest it when there's a better alternative, certainly when you have two hands involved. But it is something that got pulled out of a DVD and was posted as kind of like a bonus learning clip. And out of context, we get it. It does look kind of silly out of context, but in context, you know, it's still something we showed students in advanced pistol handling classes.
And that's what I figured. I didn't figure you were teaching, hey, this is the way to do it. But, hey, Rob, we're out of time. Really quick hour. Thanks so much for coming on the show tonight, man. Really appreciate it.
That was great. I appreciate it. And if anybody has any other questions, they can find me on the Facebook or the Twitter and be glad to talk to them, or they can check out personaldefensenetwork.com.
Excellent. Thanks, Rob. So next week, we're going to be playing our very first rerun as I go out and take Craig Douglas's arm movement and structure class. Week after that, when we come back, we're going to be talking with John Hearn about the FBI Miami shootout of 86. Make sure you check out ballisticradio.com and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone, and always be safe. See you next Sunday at 7 p.m. right here on 55 KRC, the talk station.